Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
A very warm welcome to this edition of Africa Link on Friday, July the 27th. I am Abubakar Jalo.
And I am Eddie Micah Jr. Thank you for joining us live from our studios in Bonn, Germany.
Now, coming up, voters in Mali will go to the polls on Sunday to choose between 24 candidates who are vying to become the country's next president.
On peut jamais faire du nouveau avec les vieux.
You can't do new with the old. If you really want change, then change the system. Otherwise, you get the same.
Jamais changer un vieux par un autre.
And in South Africa, former President Jacob Zuma makes a third appearance in court today on corruption charges, with his defense team asking for more time to make their case.
Mr. Ghana, with no information as to what I'm going to put in the application, how much reading we can have done in the short time we've been briefed, how much reading we need to do, and how we're going to construct our case, says give them a month. But Judge, a month is not enough for us.
And former US President Bill Clinton has told the International AIDS Conference in Amsterdam that there will be no Brexit option in the fight against HIV and AIDS.
These stories plus your responses to our Facebook and WhatsApp post shortly after we hear what has been happening around the world.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. Ethnic clashes between hunters and herders erupted in central Mali on Friday, with government officials reporting that at least 18 people were killed in the West African nation. The surge in violence comes ahead of a hotly contested election to be held Sunday, when over 8 million eligible voters decide between 24 presidential candidates, including incumbent President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita. According to the United Nations, nearly 300 people have died in the run-up to the vote. In Zimbabwe, Nelson Chamisa's opposition MDC party held a rally near capital Harare ahead of presidential elections due Monday. Chamisa said he would hold peaceful protest if he loses the election.
We feel that the process itself is a flawed one. We feel that the outcome is contestable. We feel that things that were supposed to be done were not done. The law has been broken. There's been doing of things outside the law, besides the law, or in some cases even above the law.
The candidates face off against ruling ZANU-PF party leader President Emmerson Mnangagwa, who took over after former President Robert Mugabe was ousted in November. In Johannesburg, South Africa, the BRICS Summit of Emerging Economies has come to an end. Without mentioning U.S. President Donald Trump by name, the leaders of Russia, China, Brazil, India, and South Africa vow to strengthen economic cooperation in the face of U.S. tariff threats and unilateralism. Host South African President Cyril Ramaphosa hailed the summit as a success, and Chinese President Xi Jinping said the summit would bring about change.
At China's initiative, this BRICS summit has decided to establish new industrial revolution. We must ride the latest trend of development and build up synergy to realize inclusive and innovative development.
This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. A new strain of the Ebola virus has been found in bats in Sierra Leone, nearly 2 years after the Ebola epidemic killed over 11,000 people across West Africa. As a precautionary measure, the government warned people not to eat bats. In Eritrea, President Isaias Afwerki has officially invited Somali President Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed for a three-day visit to the Horn of Africa nation. Somalia did not immediately respond to the invitation, which, if accepted, could represent a shift between the rival countries, as they have not held diplomatic relations in nearly 15 years. The invitation follows a diplomatic thaw between Eritrea and Ethiopia after more than two decades of conflict. And finally, sky watchers are in for a treat tonight, as a so-called blood moon eclipse will be visible for many parts of the world. The eclipse occurs once in 100 years and will coincide with Mars' closest approach to Earth in nearly 15 years. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
And if you are just joining us, this is your favorite program, Africa Link on DW, and my name is Abubakar Jalo.
And I am Eddie Micah Jr. A warm welcome to you listening to this program on our Facebook page, DW Africa. I see John Otu, you're very welcome, and Ali Cisse. Welcome
Definitely.
To the show.
Thanks a lot, guys. Now, we go to Mali. Campaigning for next Sunday's presidential election comes to an end today. All 24 candidates have been busy traversing the vast country.
And some have even traveled abroad to address Mali's vast diaspora, which represents almost 500,000 votes. So how have things gone and what's next? Bram Postumus has the story.
Candidates in Mali's presidential elections receive or buy the support of artists, who then publicly announce their support. Living legend Salif Keita has endorsed veteran opposition leader Soumaila Cisse. And the no less legendary Oumou Sangaré, who you are hearing here, is supporting businessman Aliou Boubacar Diallo, who is trying his luck for the first time. The man they all must beat is President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita.
Les investisseurs étrangers déjà installés au Mali et enfin les chefs d'entreprise de la diaspora.
Here he is, holding a welcome speech for international business people coming to invest in his country. After three failed attempts, he finally clinched the presidency in 2013 with a promise to fix Mali's multiple problems, starting with ending the war in the north. But Mali's problems have deepened, even when the carnival-like campaign mood would have you believe otherwise. The armed conflict has spread to the center of the country. Unemployment and poverty remain deeply entrenched. Who can fix this?
C'est à vous de gérer, de dire nous allons mettre dans ça.
I can, says Soumaila Cisse. The problem is that he and President Keita are virtually indistinguishable. Same education background, similar international careers, they served the same government and were in the same political party in the 1990s before starting their own. Don't expect change from either, says Mali's premier rap star, Milmo.
On peut jamais faire du nouveau avec les vieux.
You can't do new with the old. If you really want change, then change the system. Otherwise, you get the same.
Jamais changer un vieux par un autre.
That rules out the vast majority of the 24 candidates, bar a few. And mind you, almost none of them stand a chance of making it past the first round. That is why the talk here is about four people. President Keita, his challenger Cisse, Aliou Diallo, and Sheikh Modibo Jara. Campaigning has been largely peaceful. The biggest upset came when 1 week ago the opposition claimed that they had discovered 1.2 million potentially fraudulent votes. The government has not responded to the claim in another meeting between the opposition and Prime Minister Soumaila Boubé Maiga on Thursday ended without a solution. There has been talk of a boycott, but nobody really believes that any of the candidates will pull out at the last minute. Sunday is polling day. First results will come on Monday, and a few days later, we will know who has made it to the second round.
Bram Postumus with that report. A major international conference on preventing the spread of HIV, which can develop into fatal AIDS, is taking place in Amsterdam in the Netherlands. 36.9 million people worldwide are living with HIV. The United Nations says that last year, around 1.8 million people were newly infected.
Now, there is no cure for HIV, so people can only be helped to live with it. However, new HIV infections can be avoided altogether, and a treatment called pre-exposure prophylaxis, or PrEP, is provided to be at least part of the answer. Researchers confirm that it can significantly reduce people's chances of catching HIV. Now, Matthew Hudson, the executive director of AIDSMAP, an HIV information website, was speaking from Amsterdam to my colleague Amrita Chima about PrEP.
Well, PrEP, when it's taken, is incredibly effective. I mean, what we've seen from a number of studies, they were looking at how effective it was, and initially we were thinking it was about 86% effective. Mm-hmm. But actually what we see is someone is 100% adherent. If they take the drugs as directed, then we're seeing very close to 100% efficacy, and that's incredibly exciting.
So the PrEP pill does sound very promising, but how many people across the world actually have access to this kind of treatment, and is it affordable?
Well, at the moment, we think it's somewhere between 300,000 and 350,000 people are taking PrEP. About half of those are in America, and we are seeing some kind of quite exciting programs. We're trying to roll out PrEP in other countries. In my home country of England, we have a trial which is ongoing at the moment, and that's got places to 10,000 people. But that isn't enough to meet the demand. And in fact, my colleagues at the Terence Higgins Trust, which is an HIV charity in England, have just offered to support an additional 1,000 people to be able to buy it, because it is an expensive drug. And that is obviously creating challenges and barriers to accessing PrEP.
Matthew Hodson speaking to Amrita Chima from the World AIDS Conference in Amsterdam. Now, the criminal case of former South African President Jacob Zuma was today postponed to the 30th of November at the High Court in Pietermaritzburg. Zuma's defense was given until the 6th of November to file its opposition application to the case.
Now, Zuma is facing 16 criminal charges related to 783 payments he allegedly received in connection to the country's multi-billion dollar arms deal. Thuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
These were former South African President Jacob Zuma's supporters who sang and danced outside the High Court in Pietermaritzburg, where he had his third court appearance on corruption charges. Zuma himself arrived in court in a good mood, smiling and engaging those who had come to support him. Once the court was in session, the prosecution told the court that the issue of Zuma's legal funding had been resolved, and also that he had abandoned his bid to make representation to the National Prosecuting Authority, challenging the decision to reinstate the charges. Lead prosecutor Billy Downer asked the court to give an early date for the trial.
Criminal trial of the 30th of November would be appropriate. So that once again, the state is more than ready for trial.
However, this was objected by Zuma's legal team. The team, which was recently appointed by Zuma, after firing his initial legal team, argued that it would be unfair for it to go through a mountain of documents stretching over 17 years and be ready for trial by the 30th of November. Zuma's counsel, Mike Hellens, accused Downer of trying to rush the case at the expense of his client.
Mr. Downer, with no information as to what I'm going to put in the application, how much reading we can have done in the short time we've been briefed, how much reading we need to do, and how we're going to construct our case, says give them a month. But Judge, a month is not enough for us.
Acting Judge President Njabulisani Madondo concurred with Zuma's defense, giving them until the 16th of November 2018 to file opposing application.
So in these circumstances, one has to take into account in deciding the time period whether the fairness of the trial will somehow be prejudiced by not giving the defense an adequate time to prepare its application.
The matter was postponed to the 30th of November. Meanwhile, Zuma's court case has divided the ruling African National Congress, with the entire KwaZulu-Natal province vowing to support him till the end, despite a ban from the party leadership.
Thuso Kumalo.
Now, after a report on the Gambia's president, Adama Barrow, who is planning to build 60 mosques every year in the Gambia, we ask you, does religion and politics go together?
And definitely a lot of comments came through, starting with Mohammed Ali, who says, religion has always been a good thing. It helps us in so many ways. Unfortunately, politicians have been lurking behind religion to achieve their hidden goals.
Caleb Chauro from Kenya says, religion is bad for Africa. Many people are either misusing or misunderstanding it.
Now, Fruba adds, the opium of the people. Africa has a serious economic problem which can never be addressed by religion.
Thanks for all your responses and keep your comments coming here on Africa Link.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link. I'm Eddie Micah Jr.
And my name is Abubakar Jallo. Thanks to everyone who are listening live on our Facebook page, DW Africa, especially Kanjo Divine, Factor Malo from Ghana, I guess.
Exactly. And actually, Shane Meineke is still tuned in. Well, coming up in the next 15 minutes, German Bundesliga giant Bayern Munich has paid a whopping 10 million euros for a young Canadian, Alphonso Davies. Who is this 19-year-old?
He's an electric player. If you watch him on YouTube, you can find all kinds of videos of him dribbling. He's a guy that likes to run at defenses. For my money, takes too many touches on the ball at this point because he plays for Vancouver Whitecaps in Major League Soccer. And defenses there are not what they are in top European leagues.
Now, stick around to hear more from our sports guru, Chuck Penfold. Also coming up is African Roots, and we will get to know more about how a storyteller followed his dream.
Definitely. Now, this Saturday, Zimbabwe's political parties will hold their last campaign rallies ahead of the Monday general election. There seems to be a general calm of nerves ahead of the elections compared to the last elections as President Mnangagwa seeks to legitimize his government with a win.
There are, however, still concerns by the opposition about the personnel in charge of the Electoral Commission because they were still in charge during the Mugabe era. And some concerned hope this will not mar the election in any way. DW's Columbus Mavunga has been following this fairly peaceful campaign compared to previous years and filed this report.
This country's previous elections campaign were characterized by violence and deaths. For example, ahead of Zimbabwe's presidential runoff in 2008, the opposition said it lost more than 300 people to violence while thousands were injured. But not this time, says Charity Charamba, the police spokeswoman.
The prevalence of violence this time around is less as compared to previous elections. And the obvious reason is that the highest office in this country has been preaching peace throughout. There's commitment, there's political will that there's no violence.
Main rivals President Emmerson Mnangagwa and opposition leader Nelson Chamisa of the Movement for Democratic Change have largely avoided personal attacks of each other as their predecessors used to do. The opposition goes into that election with a plethora of complaints against the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, which it accuses of rigging for the ruling ZANU-PF party, as it used to do under Robert Mugabe's 30-year rule. But Alexander Rusero, a senior lecturer of journalism and international politics at the Harare Polytechnic College, says the antagonism of the opposition and the elections body could affect the credibility of the polls.
The friction is not healthy, especially given that the country in a few days' time will be going to an election, because there has to be some degree of perception management. There has to be some positive perception of the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission.
In Akshura's farming area, about an hour drive east of Harare, 73-year-old Helen Katandika is not concerned about the fight of Mugabe and Mnangagwa. She's voting for the 75-year-old politician. Why, I asked.
I'm supporting Mnangagwa because he is our father. We have had so many elections in the past, but unlike those elections, these ones have no violence. There is no quarreling amongst us if we are for different political parties. I support ZANU-PF because it gave me this land.
In Epworth, about 50 kilometers east of Harare, is Josephine Mari, who is confident that 40-year-old Chamisa will be Zimbabwe's next leader.
Nothing. They are just the same, these two, Mnangagwa and Mugabe. I am not going to vote, as I'm classified an alien since my parents are of Malawian origin. I used to buy stuff from South Africa and Mozambique for resale here, but I'm broke.
With 5.6 million registered voters, who will they choose as their next leader? The results are only expected by next week, Saturday, latest, as the Constitution requires the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission to release results within 5 days after the close of polls.
Columbus Mavunga with that report from Harare. And on Facebook, we've been asking, what do Zimbabwe's leaders have to offer?
And that's always, Abu. A lot of people commented on our Facebook page. Interesting ones. Mm. Now, NYK, Chukwuemeka says, democracy or its content, such as periodic elections, doesn't automatically generate development. The success of political parties at the polls in Africa has no effect on the development of the state.
That's a good one there. We have Ibrahim Jallo from The Gambia. He says we need peaceful and fair elections. And Farai from Zimbabwe says Nelson Chamisa is our only hope. Thank you.
African Roots, the researchers.
The storytelling tradition in Yoruba culture sparked Stephen Temitope David's interest in history. Today, the Nigerian seeks to add an African perspective to the Western narratives.
Now, Yulia Yaki met up with Stephen in Stellenbosch, South Africa, where he is pursuing his PhD thesis. He talks about the importance of rewriting African history and not just focus on the Western narratives.
You might have heard of the Scottish explorer Mungo Park. According to Stephen Temitope's history book at school, the Scottish explorer who travelled West Africa in the late 18th century discovered the River Niger. Did he, though?
Through my dad, I'd heard about people who lived at the banks of these rivers even before Mungo Park was born. So it shows how Africans have been robbed of a certain confidence regarding who they are through the way history has been written.
Fast forward 15 years, and Stephen is now a PhD student at Stellenbosch University. For the 30-year-old Nigerian, it is crucial that Africans take a fresh look at the Western narratives and that the students are introduced to a new perspective.
It's critical for the young people to start having this sense of who they are right from secondary school years, so that by the time they get into varsity, they have a deep knowledge of their identity.
An important, though neglected, part of the Nigerian identity, says Stephen, is the Nigerian Biafra War. The war started in 1967, when a secessionist movement proclaimed the Republic of Biafra. Stephen decided to write his thesis on this brutal civil war. The idea to research this topic was sparked by recent events in his home country.
In Nigeria right now, the agitation for secession is really at the front of issues in the country. And lately it has taken a violent turn. That got me thinking about why there's so much interest in this secessionist agenda, particularly amongst the youths. And my preliminary research revealed that it's because a lot of these young people do not have a proper sense of history. They do not have a deep engagement with what really transpired during the war.
Stephen hopes to fill this vacuum by publishing a popular version of his thesis once he is finished. And he hopes that African societies recognize the value of historical research and history as a profession.
I have a lot of people I'm mentoring that would run to me to say, I want to do this, but my parents want me to be a doctor, they want me to be an engineer. It's because of the premium we place on certain disciplines. But it's important that we acknowledge that the humanities as a whole has a lot to contribute even to the sciences.
Stephen encourages young people to go their own ways. He himself took a slight detour before he became a full-time historian.
I had a brief stint in telecoms back home. I worked for 6 years. Then I found that I wasn't getting fulfilled. I just felt there was a lot more I could do. Now I am doing what I really want to do. So there's absolutely nothing that trumps that.
Stephen Temitope David, an enthusiast about African history. And that report was written by Yulia Yaki and presented by Sela Oneko. And this African Roots series was a project in cooperation with the Gada Henkel Foundation.
Right, Abu. Now, on Facebook, we still have some live audience over there. Daoud Omar, I should say, says hello. Hello back. Also, Kanjo Divine says hello. Factor Melot GH started with a hi and at. I guess talking about Zimbabwe's elections this weekend. You say, please let peace prevail during and after elections. We pray and hope for the best. Hashtag One Africa, One, well, actually talking about Mali now. Okay, nice to know, Factor Melody.
Definitely. Now to some sport, we head over. It seemed to be a harmless photo between Mesut Ozil and Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. But the ripple effect of that has caused much controversy that would have been imagined, leading to Ozil resigning from the national team duties, citing racial abuse.
Now, former Brazilian-born German national team player Claude Meyer Barreto, commonly known as Cacao, who is the integration commissioner of the German Football Federation, has criticized both Ozil and the DFB for the way the Ozil and Gundogan picture with Erdogan was handled. I spoke earlier to DW's Chuck Penfold and first asked him what he made of Cacao blaming both Ozil and the DFB for poor handling of the situation.
Well, his criticism, I think, is fair on both sides. Management of this whole controversy that started with the picture of Ozil and İlkay Gundogan with Turkish President Erdogan was just catastrophic. I mean, the one day Grindel, the president of the German Football Association, came out. The first comment was quite strong against Ozil, and the next day, or Ozil and Gundogan, actually. And then the next day it was sort of, we don't want to overdo this. And it seemed to flip back and forth and then after Germany got knocked out, without directly saying it, they seemed to make him the scapegoat for Germany getting knocked out. But everybody who watched the games knows he definitely wasn't the reason. He wasn't the worst player on the pitch by a long shot. So, this has just been terrible management. And then, of course, Ozil has to know, or had to know, that when you meet with a president of Turkey who has trampled over human rights and has been throwing even Turkish-German journalists in jail for no good reason, that people aren't going to like it. It goes against everything, supposedly, the DFB, the German Football Association, and this country officially stand for.
Exactly. And an interesting thing, though, is that some Turkish politicians are also against Ozil for taking that pick. Eh?
Well, yeah, German-Turkish politicians.
German-Turkish, yeah.
Yeah, some of them have been the strongest critics because they're sort of fighting in their own way against the Erdogan regime as well. So they're really upset about it.
Mm.
Kakao has said he feels that the accusations Ozil's made against Grindel are too strong. He says, as you mentioned, he's a black player, played for Germany, but born in Brazil.
Mm.
Now the integration commissioner for the DFB. He said he's never experienced anything like that in the DFB. So I have to take him at his word.
Mm.
But certainly the way they seem to scapegoat Ozil, just wasn't right. And you could see how somebody would take it that way, given his background.
Bayern Munich, as always, are preparing. They are known for splashing the cash on big names. But they've spent a little over 10 million euros on their new signing, Alphonso Davies. And the billion-dollar question for those that do not know him is, who is he? What's so special about him?
You better get to know him. he's been on my radar for about two and a half years because I'm from Canada. He plays for Canada. I guess he's just still 17. He played his first game, I think, for Canada at 16.
Mm-hmm.
He's an electric player. If you watch him on YouTube, you can find all kinds of videos of him dribbling. He's a guy that likes to run at defenses. For my money, takes too many touches on the ball at this point because defenses in the Major League Soccer, he plays for Vancouver Whitecaps in Major League Soccer, and defenses there are not what they are in top European leagues. So he's able to do that there. He'll come over here probably in January, but he won't be able to play until he turns 18 in November. But that'll be a real test then to see how he goes against Bundesliga defenses. He's got, great African connection too. His parents were Liberian. They got out of, I guess it was the Second War.
The Second Civil War.
Were refugees in Ghana and applied for refugee status in Canada and got it. And then he moved over to Canada with his parents when he was 5 and has grown up there. And he just became a Canadian citizen just about a year ago, just in time to play at the Gold Cup.
Yeah, exactly.
So a big African connection there, and I think potentially a really exciting player. And I'm really excited that a great player is finally playing for Canada. So.
Exactly. DW's Chuck Penfold with sports.
And I'm pretty sure you're excited too because he's got some Ghanaian connection there.
Unfortunately the parents moved to Ghana as refugees and eventually they moved to Canada. But Abu, that's the thing.
It's interesting though that usually it's the MLS, the Major League Soccer, that comes to Europe to buy players, not the other way around.
Not the other way around. So what's happening? That's a billion dollar question.
I don't know what Bayern is finding in this kid. Interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah. Anyways, it's the first time in 15 years that the president of Somalia says he's going to visit Eritrea.
Mm-hmm.
We've been having new responses to that story.
As always. Now, Kerdan Abbas says the real game in Horn has started. US and UAE is behind the shadow. So goes on to mention Djibouti, Eritrea, Ethiopia, Somalia and Somaliland is on the same boat. Can someone predict what's next?
Well, I'm pretty sure there's peaceful things happening there. Yusuf says, I am not pessimistic. East Africa would be a great region.
Yeah, definitely. And finally, Leon Ntara says this is one of the best days of these people of the same origin to get together.
Well, it's been a pleasure, and it's Friday, and I'd like to say thank you all for those of you who've been listening from Monday to Friday. My name is Abubakar Jallo.
And I'm Eddie Maika Jr.